Hi there and welcome. You're on The Journey of Hope with Rodney Mathers. The Journey of Hope is a podcast that addresses the issues men and women face after incarceration. We've got one especially for the ladies today. Now, whether you're just coming home or you're waiting for a loved one to return home, we have Jennifer Maggio here today, and she has an inspiring message just for you. And Jennifer is here, and we'll be discussing her book, The Life of a Single Mom, right after this on The Journey of Hope. Hey, y'all, coming up in the next couple of weeks on The Journey of Hope. Next week, we have Mr. Johnny Dent, and the following week, we have Mr. Richard Norris. They both have especially designed messages for the ex-offender. Join us, won't you, in the next couple of weeks right here on The Journey of Hope. Hi, everybody, and welcome back. I have on the phone with me Jennifer Maggio. She's written a book called Overwhelmed, The Life of a Single Mom. Jennifer had a troubled childhood, I think it's fair to say, and found herself alone and pregnant at age 17. And she faced the possibility of surviving out there with the child at such a young age. And her book is about how she overcame this. And it's very apropos for those of you out there that are raising the children by yourself as your spouse is serving their time of incarceration. Jennifer, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Rodney. I really appreciate it.
Listen, the first thing I wanted to tell you, I got to get this out of the way. My wife just absolutely loves you. She says that you are just right on target. I have three children, and they all went through their teenage years during the time that I was incarcerated, and she's read your stuff, and she says it's just right on target. So I want everybody to know that. The first thing I want to ask you is, at what point in all of this did your faith become important?
Well, in looking back, it was, you know, I tell people regularly that the Lord had me in the palm of his hand the whole time. And I think oftentimes we don't recognize that when we're in the midst of the junk that we're in and the mess that we've found ourselves in.
Right.
But I, at 20 years old, I had two children. I had already been pregnant four times, so I had two miscarriages and had two children. I was living in the projects on food stamps and welfare.
Mm-hmm.
And I came to a place where I hit the bottom of my bathroom floor, quite literally, and began to scream out and pray. And just at that point in my life, was not even sure that there was a God, because I felt like if there were, then certainly I wouldn't be struggling the way that I was, if mm-hmm. I'm being really honest with the listeners. But that was a turning point for me. It was a radical, transforming moment when I felt the presence of God. I felt like I could make it. I felt renewed, and went on to begin to be active in my church again, and the rest is mm-hmm. how the story goes.
I'm sure there are people listening that find themselves in that position right now and probably can relate to your early life as well. So let's back up just a little bit and let's talk a little bit about your childhood and coming up to the point where I believe your father kicked you out of the house. Is that right? When you were 17 and you were pregnant. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. My mother was killed when I was very young. I was an early toddler. And so I was raised by my dad. My dad used alcohol to deal with the problem and mm-hmm. his grief from losing a wife unexpectedly. Mm-hmm. And my dad also went on to marry a total of 6 times.
Wow.
And so my home was very much a revolving door of misfits of every kind. I had girlfriends and mistresses. My dad had girlfriends and mistresses during and in between the marriages. And so at the young age of 3 years old, I began being molested by different people that were coming into our home.
Mm-hmm.
That lasted for 9 years at the hands of several different perpetrators. My father was not one of those, but just step relatives and neighbors and the like. And so I went through that, through the different stepmothers that I had. I also was beaten severely. I've been forced to steal, forced to view pornography at a very young age. Just everything that so many of your listeners probably can relate to, just having
right.
a tumultuous home life.
Mm-hmm.
And I found myself at 13 years old, desperate for validation, desperate for attention, and had such low self-esteem that I began having sex and went from one relationship to another just seeking out someone that would love me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I found myself. As I said, I got pregnant twice in high school, hid both of those pregnancies, and had miscarriages. And then I was graduating, high school valedictorian, my whole life in front of me. So intelligence is not the problem here, as you well know.
Mm-hmm.
But I just had this hole in my heart. And so at 17, I graduated high school 6 months pregnant, hid that pregnancy until I graduated, and told my dad. And my dad's exact words to me were, "Have a nice life." And he did kick me out of the family home.
Wow. But you had, coming out of high school, you mentioned that you were a valedictorian. You had other things going for you as well. I mean, I believe I saw somewhere where you were homecoming queen or something like that. Is that correct?
Oh, I was Miss Overachiever. I was class president and on the homecoming court. I was anything and everything that I could achieve success in, I did. I was on the basketball team. I was very active in my high school, and I think that part of me, because my home life was what it was,
mm-hmm.
I think that my school life, I tried to excel, because here again, constantly seeking that validation that I had value, that my life had meaning. And so when you perform well in school and when you are, you excel academically, that creates a certain amount of recognition.
Mm-hmm. And so this brings us up to the point where your dad kicked you out of the house,
mm-hmm.
And you were pregnant, you were 17,
yes.
And you mentioned in the first question that you finally came to grips with Christ when you were about 20. So there's a 3-year period in there that I'm curious about. Let's talk about that. Where were you living? How were you surviving? Tell us about that.
For several months after I was kicked out of the family home, I kind of wandered from one person to the other. I stayed with friends, and at this point, of course, all of my friends are teenagers as well, and so no one's
right.
financially independent.
Right.
But, you know, it's just not a great time in life to be homeless, for sure. But you know, I had a family that took me in. This was some friends of mine. Their mother invited me to live with them. And so she really was an angel in my life, because she came in and really mothered me, not just took me in, but she began to help me get prenatal care and help me. I was not permitted to get clothes from my home. So, I mean, I had nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And so just wound up living at this woman's home for a while. She helped me through the latter part of my pregnancy, and I enrolled in college full-time at night right after I gave birth, and I worked full-time during the day and got put on a waiting list to go into government housing.
Mm-hmm.
And so wound up getting into government housing, getting on all of the government assistances for food stamps and welfare and child care assistance and just everything that I qualified for, because I couldn't make it otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
And moved out on my own, had no furniture, you know, and just right. gradually had people be generous with me and give me things. Mm-hmm. And I want listeners to know that really I was at a place where I did not feel like, you know, the Lord was really dealing with me and pulling me back to the church because I had written church off, you know, a long time ago. Mm-hmm. But I felt like I didn't belong there. I was embarrassed at my situation. I was embarrassed. I had no money. I was at a very low place. And so even when I went back to the church after that situation where I was on my bathroom floor, I was at a place where I sat on the very back row of the church and was certain that there was a spotlight on me and that people were staring. And, of course, that was my imagination. But that's what I felt like. And that's what so many people feel like when you've had some type of hardship in your life. Mm-hmm. But the one thing that I did do is I continued to go. I stayed committed, even during the uncomfortable time. I stayed committed to going back to church once I had that. I wandered around. You were asking about the 3 years in between. Mm-hmm. I wandered around. I was searching. I was in a dead-end relationship. I had another kid, just got pregnant less than a year after I gave birth to the first one. Mm-hmm. And although I was going to college full-time at night and working during the day, I still was in a dead-end situation in my life. Mm-hmm. Because whether I was beginning to become financially secure, but I didn't have the Lord. You know, I didn't have that relationship with God. And so I was in a service one Sunday morning, and the pastor started preaching on tithing. And for those who aren't familiar with what that is, that's just giving 10% of your money to the church, mm-hmm. basically, to the Lord, but ultimately to the church. And I was sitting, and this was the conversation, honestly, that I had with God. I'm laughing to myself, saying, here I am living on food stamps and welfare. I'm just now getting back into church, giving this God thing a try, and you're telling me to give my money to the church. This must be the preacher wanting a new car. I mean, this is what this, you know, this is my honest right. conversation with God. Mm-hmm. And through 6 months of not being able to get that sermon off my mind, I decided that that was God talking to me and began to tithe my income, my little $200 a month at the time. Mm-hmm. I was tithing on that. Wow. And God began to bless me supernaturally above anything I could ever think or imagine. I landed a job that I was not qualified for nor educated for, and began to be very, very successful financially in corporate America. And it makes no sense on paper, so I have to give credit to God because I know that's what it was.
And eventually you were working in the six-figure range for mm-hmm. salary, and I've read. And so I'm really glad you brought up the point about the uncomfortable nature of going back to church in that kind of a situation. All of us that listen to the show, me included, have experienced that, and it does pass. If you just keep going, that feeling will go away, and I'm glad that you brought that up. I've noticed that your book is kind of divided into two parts. The first part is a little bit about your history, and then the second part is more of a, I don't know, maybe kind of a how-to, how you were able to raise the kids and to achieve the things that you wanted to achieve. For example, you talk about managing finances. Tell us a little bit about that. What advice would you have for us along those lines?
Well, I think the number one thing with managing your finances is that you have to begin to tithe. And that is not something that a church has told me. That is not something that a pastor has told me. That is what God's Word says. And every part of the second half of the book, and I go into overcoming abuse, effective parenting, managing your finances, I go into each one of those things, but each one of those things are based on biblical principles. And so with managing finances, I'd mentioned that I'd gone into corporate America. I went into corporate America, and this is so ironic, but I was doing financial counseling. And so I went into corporate Wow. America with no money whatsoever and was living in a horrible situation, but they taught me how to manage finances. Mm-hmm. And that is, no matter what the situation of each listener, I think the number one thing that each listener needs to recognize is that you have to start somewhere. And that means starting with cleaning up your credit or starting with getting a job and being able to slowly budget your money. You know, just baby steps. People mm-hmm. set their sights on these goals that are wonderful, these beautiful, large, attainable goals, but then they don't recognize the small steps that take place on the journey.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So reasonable expectations, and it's okay to dream big, but we need to recognize that there are steps that need to be made along the way before we can get to those big goals. Another thing that you talk about in the second part of the book that I'm really curious what you have to say about this is emotional stability. Mm. Tell me about that.
Well, my expertise is with single parents, and I know that you work with ex-offenders. And so it's so interesting that 78% of our current prison population was raised by a single mother.
That's right.
And I don't know if you're aware of that, but so that's so interesting that the two tie so closely together.
Yes.
And when you're talking about emotional stability, you're talking about things like depression and loneliness, anger, bitterness, offense. And these are things that no matter what your situation, whether you're a single parent or whether you have had a storybook life, it doesn't matter. These things can seep into our lives and they totally dictate our reaction. They totally dictate how our futures go. Because if we have been offended, if we have been hurt, and so many of your listeners I know can relate to this, if you have gone through a tragedy in your own life, you can put up a brick wall where you are going to be anger and bitter and mad at the world. And so that is, unfortunately, where a lot of people stay for years and years, and even an eternity they stay there. And so I tell folks this a lot when I'm invited out to speak. I get more phone calls about parenting and financial advice than I ever do about spiritual and emotional issues.
Interesting.
But I want folks to recognize is that if your emotional and your spiritual life is whole, if you're healthy in those two areas, it's amazing how your parenting and your financial matters begin to just work themselves out. Because you're healthy, you can make good decisions.
Mm-hmm. And I kind of had a second part to this question as well. What role does forgiveness play in emotional stability, in your view? What would you say about that?
My goodness, we could camp out here. Forgiveness is so key. Because if I made a decision, you know, I talked about going through sexual abuse. Mm-hmm. I talked about going through being beaten. I've walked through domestic violence and so many things that we don't have time to cover. But if I had not made a decision to forgive and to let go of those things that they hold you hostage. They hold you hostage and they eat you like a cancer from the inside out. All of those instances of being wronged, you develop this bitterness, and hurting people hurt other people. And so when you're hurting and you haven't dealt with your pain, you haven't dealt with, and forgiveness, it's important that people recognize that forgiveness is not that you are saying that whatever your tragedy was, whatever that wrongdoing was, is okay.
Right.
That's not what forgiveness is.
Right.
Forgiveness is saying that you're letting go of it.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
forgiveness
excellent.
Is so much more for you as an individual than it ever was about anyone else that's involved in the picture.
Mm-hmm. Why the book? What compelled you to write the book?
I am not a lifelong aspiring author. I was in the bed one night. I had, you know, the Lord had called me out of full-time corporate America job, and I had mentioned that was in that for almost 10 years, and I had began to work full-time with single mothers. And so that's mm-hmm. where I was in my life about 3.5-4 years ago. And I had counseled hundreds of single moms personally and really been on the front lines with women that were hurting, whether it was and I work with lots of ex-offenders as well. Lots of women that are in our prison system are single mothers, and so mm-hmm. have lots of experience with that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as I began to work with women, I'm a strong advocate in educating yourself, reading, creating awareness. Mm-hmm. There was nothing on the market for single mothers, very little. And then if we take the books that are on the market for single mothers and then put the Christian perspective to it, well, you're talking less than 1%
right.
of the current books on the market. And so I was in bed at midnight one night, got up, and began to pen my story and just start writing about those things that had happened to me. And that was fairly easy to do. I knew all of that. And then when I finished that portion of the book, the Lord really began to reveal to me these areas that are not just single-parent issues. They really aren't. I wrote the book for single parents, but it's amazing the number of letters I get from men, married men, from women that are single. You know, I'm getting emails from all kinds of people because the book is inspiring. Mm-hmm. And the information that I put in the book is not just about how to parent alone effectively. It's about how to parent your children effectively, how to make good decisions. And so I wrote the book because I felt like God had laid it on my heart to really put myself out there with what I'd gone through to encourage others, and then also to teach people how to live successfully.
Mm-hmm. Well, what advice, Jennifer, would you have for, now I do know that there are some women that are listening to the show who have chosen to allow their marriage to stay intact while their husband is incarcerated and they're raising children. What advice would you have for them today?
Well, first of all, I know that in this moment, in this season that you're in, there's a loneliness there. There's a very, you could be surrounded by friends and family and still be very alone.
Absolutely.
So I know that this is a dark season, not only for your husbands, but for you. And I just want to encourage you. I know that so many people have been hurt by their local church, but I believe that there is great strength there. I believe that there is great unity there. And I want to encourage these women to get plugged into a local church, a loving, open church that will welcome you, and a place where you can be involved and really share. Share about what you're feeling. Don't be embarrassed or ashamed, but share with people what you're going through, because that's where encouragement is going to come in.
Mm-hmm. And I also want to add that it's okay to shop around churches. I mean, you keep going until you find somewhere that's comfortable. That's what I had to do. And I very much felt like you mentioned earlier where the spotlight was on me, and I've heard from other ex-offenders who have felt the same way, particularly ex-offenders that have crimes in certain categories. And it's okay to shop around. It's okay to shop around for a church, isn't it? What are you up to these days? Do you still work in corporate America, or are you just out speaking about your book? What do you do?
Yes, I am a full-time speaker and author. I'm a columnist for a couple of different magazines, and so do that. And then also I am in the middle of my second book. And so that is really a book that's going to be written to churches about the single mom epidemic in our country, and specifically what their role is and why single moms aren't going to church. 70% of single moms don't go to church.
Wow.
And so that is an amazing statistic. And I've heard, of course, you know how statistics are. They'll vary a little, but I've heard even figures as high as 90%. And so I think 70% is a very safe estimate. And they don't attend regularly because they don't feel like that they are welcomed. And that is what I keep going back to. And that's the same thing that ex-offenders would go through. That's the same thing that homeless would go through, or former strippers and prostitutes. You know, the marginalized of our country don't feel like they're welcomed in our churches. And as a Christian, that's a big problem. Mm-hmm. And so that's, I travel and share my story, work with, we have launched more than 50 single mothers ministries in other churches around the country now, and my vision is that we would do that in a much larger capacity and begin to teach churches how to minister to single mothers.
Wow. How do we get in touch with you, and how do we find your book?
You can visit thelifeofasinglemom.com. Mm-hmm. And that website will have a lot of information for single mothers. It has resources. It has free information. It's got my schedule on there. And then my email address is on there as well, and all of my contact information. Mm-hmm. And then the book is available there. So all of the information is at thelifeofasinglemom.com.
Jennifer Maggio, the book is called Overwhelmed, The Life of a Single Mom. Jennifer, I got to tell you, I am as impressed with you as my wife is. You've hit a home run with us, and I highly encourage people listening to the show to go out and check out Jennifer's book and her website and see what all she's got available out there. Jennifer, thank you so much for being on the Journey of Hope.
Thanks again.
My name is Rodney Mathers. We'll be right back after this. Hey, Jennifer. Hey, everybody. Love hearing from you. You can catch me at MathersRodney at yahoo.com. MathersRodney at yahoo.com. Drop me a line. Spill your shades for a blind man to find it. He can feel the whole earth move and don't even mind it. I want to know you better than I do. Believe me for myself. Bring me into you. I want to know you better than I do. Hey there, just enough time left to thank my very special guest today, Miss Jennifer Maggio. I want you to be sure and check out her information on the internet. Follow the link there that I have posted. She's got a lot of cool stuff for you to look at. Hey, listen, I want to remind you of something now. If God is for you, who can be against you? We'll see you next time right here on the Journey of Hope.